Hello everyone, what's up folks? I'm here starting a new edition, new chapter, episode, whatever you want to call it, of Chá Pedagógico with my buddy Rodolfo Macielo. So he'll join us when he's ready. I have my tea with me. There he is. Let me call him. There. Awesome. Oh, you can see all my secret
plans now. What's up, Rudy?
Hey, what's up, Andre? How's it going, brother?
Hey. Oh, just fine, man. What about you? And you know, I want to take the opportunity to say happy birthday live. You deserve. I hope you had an awesome day, man. I really think you deserve an awesome day.
Oh, man. Thank you very much. I appreciate the wishes. And yesterday was all right. It was a cool day. My family set up a surprise party for me, and it was
cool,
really cool. Yeah, it was
awesome.
It was my first surprise party ever, and it was really nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I never had a surprise party before, and it was really cool.
It's never too late, right? So awesome. I'm glad you had one.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, especially now you're too old, man. We never know how long we're going to live, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And especially as we were talking, I think it was last week, right? Or this week, I don't remember anymore.
Yeah.
There's a big chance we're going to die in 5 or 7 years, from 5 to 7
That's
years.
True. Right? That's true. That's the lifespan of people who have crazy ideas, apparently, right? Like they never make it to 40s, or, you know, maybe 45 or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, man.
We're going to get to 45 and that's it. You know, the limit is like 45.
Yeah.
And, you know, so guys, if you're watching us, cherish the episodes because we have like 10 more years or so.
Most definitely. Yeah. Yeah. So we have to produce everything we can with the time we got left. Right. So let's do it, man.
Good. For sure.
And we have a super cool topic today. And again, I have no idea how we came up with this. It's always one of those chats we have, you know.
Yeah.
And then I said something about big data, and then you said artificial intelligence. I said, oh, cool. And then let's try to do something with it, right? And then here we are. So we're going to talk about unlearning language. Are we unlearning language? Are we unlearning how to speak, huh?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
If you're following us, answer the question, huh?
Yes, this is a question that we asked throughout last week, because Sunday is the first day of the week, so this is a new week. And
exactly.
We asked this question along last week, and are we actually unlearning to speak? Because there's been a lot of discussions on how technology has been killing the language, or
exactly
how computers have been destroying the competence, the linguistic competence of our students and of our kids, and our own linguistic competence as well. So this was pretty much the core of the whole thing. Are we actually unlearning to speak? And we're going to try to connect the dots.
It's not an easy question to answer, right?
Yes, yeah. We're going to see how we're actually going. Actually, we need you guys to talk to us, to participate, and to interact with us.
Yep.
If you have also questions, and if you have any comments on if we're actually unlearning to speak, guys, please feel free. And don't wait till the end, because there's a big chance we're going to, you know, be longer, take longer than an hour. Again.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think the first thing I should say about this question, are we unlearning to speak? And I think of it as a language paradox, you know. So if you go back a couple of thousands of years ago, and especially the Western languages, you know, Greek, ancient Greek and Latin, for example, I think anyone who knows the structure of the languages would probably say that they're more complex than the languages we have nowadays, that, you know, derived from those languages. So if you look at Portuguese, for example, or English that comes from, you know, Anglo-Saxon, Germanic, so you'll see that if you go back to the source language, the parent language, it feels like it was more complex. And how can that be if theoretically those people were kind of dumb compared to us, you know? I mean, I don't want to say anything, but they were not dumb. They were pretty smart, actually. But, you know, in terms of technological progress, it doesn't make a lot of sense that people, a civilization that has less complexity, sophistication, has developed a more complex language, right? And then, so maybe in a way we are unlearning to speak because we are using other resources to communicate nowadays because of what technology has given us, right? So if you look at our verbal communication and the way we use text nowadays through social media and you know, online platforms, we use a lot of emojis and, you know, symbols and things like that that convey a lot of meaning.
Yes.
And I prefer to send a text message to someone nowadays than to call the person. It's very weird to call people nowadays, right?
Yes, people don't like to speak anymore. And it's actually very, very weird because if you consider, for example, I don't know, 400 years ago, 600 years ago, considering English, for instance, English was extremely complex.
And, definitely, yeah.
For instance, nowadays, if you consider the modal verb can, it derived from, and can today is very simple. We use it, we actually don't have inflections for can. It is a verb, it is considered a verb, but we don't have inflections for that. But 400, 600 years ago, it was a verb, it was inflected, and it worked as a normal verb. So how do you get from that point, from that linguistic complexity to the linguistic simplicity that we have nowadays? And of course, that technology is also something that we're going to talk more about this in a minute, but technology is something that requires more dynamic communication. So
that's
one of the factors why we have been using more symbols, emojis, and GIFs, and memes, and stickers, and whatever. But that's basically what sparked the big question that we've been asking you guys. If we're actually unlearning to speak because it's not logical, we should evolve. Everything evolves. Language evolves as we're evolving.
Exactly.
But it's going on. On the opposite way, because we've been evolving, but our languages, they're becoming simpler and simpler, right?
Yeah, that's and I think Drika made a very interesting comment now. She says that, I think things are faster, so we have to adapt language. Okay, I lost it. Where is it?
To fit in shorter attention span.
Exactly. So there I've been, and then I typed ES for some reason. I don't know what I did. But anyway, so apparently, some studies have shown that our attention span is shorter nowadays because we have a lot of distractors in the environment. But I suspect it has not changed that much from when, you know, the Greeks were around 3,000 years ago, and the Romans were around. I think we had pretty much the same amount of minutes or that we could hold information in our working memory, right? Mm-hmm. But in a way, the social dynamics has become so fast that we have to find different ways to convey information in a much faster way, right? And like you said, you know, Rodolfo mentioned something important. We've been evolving, so evolution has a lot to do with that. But I really like the definition that my professor gave, that, you know, sometimes we look at evolution as getting better or improving, and it's more like getting more adapted to the environment. And then whenever we think that for us to evolve, we have to get better, that might be a misconception, because if the conditions are getting worse or different in a way, and getting worse would actually mean to get better or to be better adapted to the environment. That's also considered evolution, right?
Yes.
So if you think about some organisms that have been on the planet for millions of years. Look at the shark, for example. It has never really changed much if you go, you know, millions of years ago. So it's weird from an evolutionary perspective if you think, well, you know, creatures should become better, they should improve. Well, but it was so adapted to the environment that it didn't really have to change, right?
Yeah.
And I think, like, language has to change because of the way we are communicating with one another. And that's basically why we're trying to simplify things so we can say more things in a faster way and make sure that the other person understands what we're saying, right?
For sure. And it's still getting this misconception of evolution of languages. Semantically speaking, if we use emojis or stickers, GIFs, memes, whatever. Oh, by the way, I searched. The right pronunciation is GIF and not GIF. It's so weird.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Okay. That's well, I learned something today. A GIF. That's interesting.
That's why I've been saying GIF and not GIF. So it's GIF. That's cool. The pronunciation of that. So,
all right, cool.
Semantically speaking, we have a lot of meanings involved in those symbols. And because as it's Drika, I believe your name is Adriana. So as what Adriana was telling us, yes, we need to have a faster communication nowadays, and the technology is there. We also have limitations. For instance, if we consider Twitter gives us limitation of characters, if I'm not wrong, right? It's characters, not words, right?
280 nowadays. It used to be 140, I guess.
Yeah, so they extend a little bit their limits, but we're still limited. We still have limitation of characters. So,
exactly.
Yes, why not use emoji? And it's also possible, I don't know if you've seen some lesson plans using emojis to construct sentences, etc. So it is pretty possible to communicate with emojis. Of course, we've been talking about language evolution here, and the misconception would be, well, if we've been using more complex language 400 years ago, when Shakespeare was alive, when Chaucer was alive or something, or when Edgar Allan Poe was alive, how come nowadays that we have access to more information, we've been not using the same sophisticated language than before? But the thing is, who can guarantee that use of emojis or use of GIFs and memes and stickers is not as elaborate as it was before? We cannot guarantee that because if it is possible to construct sentences using those images, it means that we also have some level of complexity inside these images.
Most definitely. And I feel like there are different ways for us to analyze what means to be complex, you know, because as you said, I once read that at the time of Shakespeare, for example, the English language had about 150,000 words or something like that. Nowadays, we have maybe 3-4 times more because if you think about words, you know, lexical items, if you think about how the language has evolved in that sense, it actually became more complex. But in a more grammatical sense, it has become more, it has become simpler. Yeah. And I found a very interesting study by some researchers at Cornell University, and they were actually able to use a computer simulation to explain that. And then the more we became interconnected and the more we grew in terms of population, the less it was possible for something, a big change in language, to be assimilated because you just had too many people. Mm-hmm. So if you have very small clusters of, you know, small groups or clans or very small tribe civilizations, whenever somebody came up with a different structure in the language, they would probably get it across everyone else because they were so confined, isolated in their own territory. But if I live in Manhattan and then I have something different, I found a new term, a new way to say something or a new structure, grammar structure, chances are, you know, my friends will hear it, my So the people who are very close to me, and, you know, it's not going to catch on because, you know, who am I in New York?
Unless you're super famous, right? If you're super famous, then it is possible. If you have like 2.4 million followers on Instagram, then you can, you can reach those people. Otherwise, it's going to be super hard.
Perfect. Yeah. And then, you know, and then this research actually says that, but think about words. Or you have to be exposed to words just a couple of times for you to actually understand their meaning.
Yeah.
Whereas for you to grasp how a certain grammar structure works, that takes longer. Yeah. So it's very possible that because we grew in terms of population and we became super interconnected, but of course we don't have access to a lot of people, we still have access to different cultures, only certain things will catch on. And the things that will thrive, words, new ways to say things, they are easy for us to grasp. But, you know, grammar structures, they're more complex. So we will try to use the simple, the easy ways to construct language, right?
Yeah. And this leads us to the following topic, which is grammars.
Grammars. Yes, exactly.
Because this is something, this is another misconception that we have as teachers. And I had when I started my career as a teacher. I thought, okay, so we have a grammar. There's a grammar book in both Portuguese or English or whatever language we're teaching. And we have a set of rules, and we have to follow those rules, and we have to make our students follow those rules. But it's not how it works. You know, nowadays, I think it's possible to expand or points of view a little bit, because basically grammar is developed through lexicon. So when we're kids and we are learning how to speak, whether it's L1 or L2 or whatever, it all starts with a word. Let's say the word is horsey, all right? So if the word that a kid is learning is horsey, everything is going to evolve around the word horsey. It's going to be horsey, give horsey, horsey gone, where horsey, and then where's horsey, and then give me the give me the horsey, and then they are going to, and that's how grammar is going to start being developed. Then their kids are will try to use horsey as a verb, like oh, it's horsing. Let's suppose the kid is in the car and the kid is seeing a horse running, and the kid is going to say, oh, it's horsing. It's horsing. Well,
exactly.
So that's how grammar works. And if we consider that everything starts as a word, and we also have that in Portuguese, for instance, if you have, if you're from Minas Gerais, guys, you are the most grammaticalized state in Brazil.
Because most definitely,
you grammaticalize everything, like trem. Yeah. Trem is grammatical, you know.
Trem is the best.
Me dá esse trem. Ah, mas esse trem não funciona. Tá trenzando. So
here in Goiânia, too, man.
What
do conta desse trem, não.
Ah,
do conta desse trem, não. Yeah, they use trem here as well, yeah. It's very close to Minas, right? Very the proximity,
So it all starts with a word, and then the word is going to be grammaticalized. So if the word if the language hasn't evolved, we would all be speaking the exact same language as 400, 500, 1,000 years ago. But we don't
That's true, yeah.
We speak different languages. Probably if we had a time machine and we had Dom Peter the First coming to our days, our current days, we wouldn't be able to communicate with Dom Peter the First because the Portuguese would be different. And and kids or students are also immersed in this situation, especially because they are more and more connected. I mean, technologically.
Most definitely.
And they're they communicate. They are immersed in a faster environment. So.
Yeah.
Because of that, because language has evolved, and because we're in so many people nowadays, not only in Brazil, but all over the world, we also have many communities, and we can say that each community has its own way to communicate. So that's why we have different grammars. We also have people with different access to levels of education. So we have people going to colleges and people not going to colleges. And the more formally educated a person is, the bigger is the chance that this person is going to have a more sophisticated and elaborate grammar. So why we have nowadays a lot of grammars. We don't have just one, and we have to show show our students this.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that there different communities have different types of grammar, and grammar has always been an instrument of power, if you think, or very elitist in a way. So if you go back to ancient Rome and Greece, for example, and this shows, for example, what kind of group or social group you belong to, if you can use grammar correctly in a very a prescriptive way. It has to be this way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if Dom Peter the First or Second came to our days, because it's, you know, royal, if you think about, you know, the group he belonged to, of course, he would probably use a very sophisticated type of Portuguese. If you go back to Machado de Assis, for example, or Shakespeare.
Check what she has just written.
Yeah.
That would
make things easier for students when, we read Os Lusíadas, for example, or many literature schools of thoughts. Exactly.
That's what because you're saying.
So it's an instrument of power that actually shows that you belong to a higher class if you can use grammar in the correct way. And then I've been watching a lot of documentaries and videos, and we are horizontalizing our, living together, our relations as humans nowadays. And this is almost like a threat to the beautiful prescriptive grammar, because apparently the grammars that people use from lower classes, they are considered wrong automatically, right? Mm-hmm. When they're just a different way to say the same things, right? Mm-hmm. But it's interesting, if you think about the evolution of language, you will see that words, like you said, word is the first item that we use, the word, because it means something normally very concrete. When the kids are reaching the concrete operational stage, according to Piaget, you know, mm-hmm. So they are able to look at something that exists, that they know is right in front of them, and name that thing, right? And then the first type of grammar, if we think about it, it's just putting a bunch of words in a sequence. So there isn't, you know, if you think about conjugations, adverbs, or anything like that, that's not necessary. You just get a bunch of words, and then you put in a sequence, and then you create the first type of grammar. Yeah. And then, of course, as we evolve, we learn how to add some words that they have, changes. They have certain modifications, right? Yeah. And then we arrive at the one proposed by Noam Chomsky, for example, that we don't really agree with sometimes, right?
Yeah.
But it's basically the very sophisticated type of grammar that has recursion. So, in a very simple way, that means that we can go on forever adding items, and we can put sentences inside sentences and inside sentences. So with a finite number of words, we can actually speak in an infinite way.
Yeah.
And so maybe you tell me about this. Well, you are the expert in this area, man.
Chomsky, of course, there's been a lot of controversies of on his studies, but this is true.
Yeah.
You know, we do have a finite number of words. We have a limitation of words, and we can create as many sentences as possible. We can make subordinations, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing with this is that we've been coining more words also.
Yes, we have.
So
we've
been actually expanding our lexicon, because I really like this example. It's an example from 4 years ago, and it's not the best example, but I like it. Neymar, 4 years ago, he created the expression etois. You know, it's been 4 years. Actually, it's been more than 4 years. It's been 5 years, and I still have no idea what he means by etois. But
well, neither do I, man.
I have no idea. But the thing is, we've been coining more words, and we've been coining more words, it's been easier to create more grammar or grammars.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
And you were talking about the relation of power, because having the power of communication was elitized, and it came from the elites, etc., etc. And it's absolutely right. Yeah. But the thing is, this is a very old point of view when it comes to colonies, because the colonies, they spoke standard language, and then the slaves, they wouldn't be able to communicate very well, so they would create a variation of that language because they had to communicate with their with the colony and the colonizers. Yeah. So that created what we call creoles, or this is the creolization of a language. The creolization of a language is when you get parts of certain languages, you mix it with your own language, and you try to connect them using a part of your own, of your L1's rule and L2's rule, and you create something completely different. And if we consider that we've been doing this, not just because nowadays we don't have colonies anymore, we don't have colonizers anymore, in a sense of a person, you know, ruling us out. But the thing is, but we've been doing this more often. Especially when it comes to because of technology. The technology gives us the opportunity to actually put word after word. We do have valences, okay? Valences are those slots. For instance, if you say, for instance, the word, the verb give, automatically you have a space for a preposition. Which is to.
Exactly.
Something like this. Okay, so it basically every word has a valence, a slot. Some of them have null slots or null valence, like book. The word book doesn't have any valence because, you know, or actually it has a null valence because you don't actually need to put a word after book. But the word give entails a preposition after that. That's why we say give to, you know. But... But that's the thing. Because of these valences, we have to fill in these valences, these slots. We've been filling in these valences with the craziest words nowadays. And we've been generating different types of grammars. And that's why I'm going to repeat. We have to take this into consideration when we go to the classroom. Because our kids, they are going to do this. One, because if we have young learners, they're going to do this because it's a natural procedure of a language acquisition. They are going to experiment words. They are going to follow their logic. Second, they are learning a second language or a foreign language.
Yep.
So they are going to make comparisons between their native language and the second language or additional language. You know, and how are they going to communicate? They'll find a way to communicate. So are they going to create, they are going to create an interlanguage, what we call an interlanguage. And then we are going to tell them or to guide them through this interlanguage, like, okay, you can use this in a certain context, but in this context, I don't think this is the right way to communicate. Yep. Why don't you try this? Why don't you try that? Okay. But the thing is, we shouldn't kill the grammars. The more grammars, the better.
Yes. That's true. That's true. And I like what Zrika mentioned there. She says that kids usually speak good grammar until they start school and generalize rules and say AUG. And this is very interesting because it has to do with the brain's capability of processing information. So, and this is why we were able to develop language to the degree we have, you know. So if you look at what's happening inside the brain when a kid listens to a word and then uses the rule that is basically a framework or a stereotype. We have a very strong stereotype, a sense of stereotyping in the brain. So we take something, we look at it, we get the basic concepts or whatever goes around it, and we form a framework or a stereotype, and we start using it for other things. This is the thinking fast kind of processing that goes on in the brain. And our brain is incredibly powerful in terms of processing. So I was looking at some of the studies that were out in the last 10 years. And nowadays, we think, the scientific community thinks, that we can process or store around 100 terabytes of information, which no computer can do that. I mean, unless it's a supercomputer, in the next couple of years, maybe three decades, we'll have a computer with the same capability of storage as the human brain. And if you go back only 19 years ago, 20 years ago, early 2000s, for example, all the information that you had on the internet was equivalent to what one human brain could hold, which is amazing if you think about that. But there's a very big difference between how the brain, the human brain, which is an organic thing, it's an organ, processes things, and how a machine processes things. And it's very interesting if you look at the history of coding or programming, you know, the language that they use, because there is a series of instructions, and they have to be put in a logical way, in a sequence, to create an algorithm, right? Our brain is much more evolved than that. We can actually learn and change the algorithm as we go. And we're going to talk about what machines are doing in a bit, right? Yeah. But the idea is we are very much capable of looking at something, looking at the structure of something, and kind of transferring the basic principles to something else. And that's how we can learn language so fast as kids, you know. We just get a lot of input. So our brain is basically taking statistics of things that are being used, and then we forget about the things that are not used. And then we form language in such a natural way that, so that's why I think Chomsky said that we had a language acquisition device, but, you know, so a lot of controversy again. Yeah, it's not really like that. It's more like, you know, we're just taking statistics of things, you know, we're listening to things, then we are able to generalize things, because that's how the brain works. It's not that we have something inside the brain for language necessarily, but it's more like we have a system in our brains, and animals have a very similar system, but they haven't developed the vocal tract as we have, and we know there's a lot of things there. But it's more like looking at something and transferring the principles to something else, and then forming a framework, and then we start using the framework, right?
Yes, and this is we are capable of. You can confirm more than anyone else here, but our brain understands codes. And what's the code that we use to communicate? A language, English, Portuguese. So basically, of course, I don't think we're ever going to have this kind of experience, but it can be a movie. I don't know, maybe if there's a movie director watching us, you know, this is a great, it's a billion-dollar movie idea.
Oh, yeah.
So all right. Get a kid, get a baby, and expose this baby to binary code. This kid is going to understand binary code, because our brain is going to process binary code. Our brains are there. We have brains, and we are able to process languages, codes. And that's what we do. But the thing, I think the problem, one of the problems with this idea, Chomsky's idea, is that he says that we also have a device, because he said it's impossible with a finite set of words, get a lot of infinite numbers of sentences. And we also produce sentences that we are exposed only once, twice, or whatever.
Yeah, or maybe never.
Or maybe never.
Right?
But one of the flaws in this is that we only acquire elaborate grammar through time. We're not going to see kids using elaborate grammar. You know, we're going to see kids, and Tomasello, one of his several works that he has, he says that kids they start producing the same type of language as their caregivers. And when I say caregivers, I'm considering mothers, fathers, yep. or whoever is taking care of that kid, you know. But they yep. start producing those words. And that's what scares us the most, because that's why parents have to be careful what they say in front of their kids. That's mainly
Don't curse in front of your kids, because they'll start repeating as parrots, you know.
Exactly.
They won't stop. Yeah.
So if you guys are watching us, and if you have newlyborns, do this experiment for 1 year or two. Don't curse, okay? I'm not telling you to curse, but try to do this. Yeah. Start communicating with your kids, with your babies, using high register, you know, formal languages and etc.
Yep.
See and you know, see if your babies are going, when they start speaking, if they're going to start reproducing that, because there's a big chance that they will.
Definitely, yeah.
So that's one of the flaws that Chomsky's work has. He didn't consider the exposure, he didn't consider actual recordings or real-life communication recordings to analyze. Because if we do analyze, we're going to see, and you know, I don't know, Drika, you've been interacting with us a lot. I'm going to use it as an example. I don't know if you have kids, but if you do have kids or babies, there's a big chance that you're not going to communicate with your baby using the language in Portuguese. It can be in Portuguese, okay? You're not going to communicate with your baby using the same language or the same structure as you have it.
Sure.
Os Lusíadas.
Exactly.
We're not going to do this because it's not part of it. There's probably going to be, it's probably going to be, where's the baby? Where's the cute baby? Where's my honey? Honey, where
are
you?
A lot of very silly sounds like beep, beep, boo, boo.
Exactly. Silly
stuff like
sounds,
that, you know?
Something like that. Yeah. Oh, Drika, you don't. Yeah. Okay, so, you know.
She doesn't have kids.
I use you as an example, Drika, because you've been interacting with us, okay? But if you ever have kids, try to do that, okay? And try to pay attention. Of course, it's going to be a lot of fun. If you have kids, you're going to communicate with the kid. The kid is going to respond. It's super cool. But For 5 minutes, try to, you know, come to your senses and think about analyze yourself, saying, oh, what am I speaking to my kid, you know? Because that's basically what we do. Not just mothers, parents, caregivers, everyone does that.
Perfect. And again, you know, I think we're going to criticize Chomsky a lot today. but if you think about, you don't really need to be exposed.
Man. He's
going to say, well, I think a lot of people are doing it nowadays, you know. It was more controversial in the 60s. But if you think about if you had to be exposed to a lot of different items of the language to be able to generalize everything, you know, to kind of use the framework, it doesn't make a lot of sense from many different points of view. Like if you become an architect or a builder, and as soon as you understand how the building blocks work, you can use them to put them together in the way you want, you know. And you can, and of course, you're going to use different references, right? So as we grow older and we become aware of how the world works and we see different things, we are able to use the building blocks that we've been acquiring since we were kids to use them in more complex, sophisticated ways, right? It doesn't mean that we need to have a mechanism in our brains that is going to be able to, you know, it's basically your references. Growing up, developing, evolving in terms of language, and knowing how language works, because now you need to have your lexical items, you need to have your vocabulary, and you need to have your grammar, and then you need to understand the general rules, and then you can put those things together, and you form language.
Yes.
And then, again, so he might have been right about recursion in a way, but if you think about how the universe might be expanding, according to astrophysicists nowadays, you know? So maybe it's not that language is infinite. It's just that we cannot see the end of it because it's so large. It's so vast.
Yes.
That if you are a mathematician and you get the number of items of a language and you actually calculate how many possible combinations you can, it's not going to be infinite. It's going to be a finite number,
probably.
Very, very, very large number, but it's still going to be And most, a lot of those combinations, they wouldn't make any sense at all.
Exactly.
Because, you know, depending on how you put the order, yeah, of the lexical items, for example, or the kind of grammar structure that you use. So
yes,
a lot of the combinations, the possible combinations, would have to be discarded anyway. And then, of course, what you're doing is kind of repeating, you know, attaching items or subordinate clauses, right? You're adding, and then you're doing basically the same thing, or just repeating. So it's not really that language is infinite in a way. Yeah. It could be. I don't know.
You know? Well, I think this is the billion-dollar question. You know, our language is language, or does language have a finite number of combinations? Well, I think we'll never know. Maybe if we have a NASA computer, or some. I've heard that Google created a supercomputer that it's possible to, you know, solve some equations that.
Oldest, 10,000 years.
In 10,000 years, and they solved in like 200 minutes.
Exactly.
So maybe
yes,
that computer can give
quantum mechanics. Yeah.
Exactly. So maybe that computer can give us an answer. But the thing is, they're going to give us a large number. And if we assume that there is a finite number of combinations, they are going to say, well, if there's a finite number of combinations, it means that it's possible to reproduce it artificially.
But that's not
entirely true, at least not now, right?
Yes. And again, so I think that brings us to the final topic, because we've been talking about brain machine, artificial intelligence, and machine learning, right?
Yeah.
And the idea that, so nowadays we have very sophisticated software and algorithms that are used by computers all over the world to actually look at patterns, at combinations of language, and come up with answers based on what people normally use. So if you know, Siri, Alexa, Google Assistant, whatever, when you look at those products, you know, very sophisticated technological products, what basically they are doing is they have a lot of input from real language from people, and, you know, and they analyze patterns, they find patterns, and they come up with combinations of possible answers and even variations of the same answer so that they don't sound so artificial. And then, of course, they learn a little bit about intonation, a little bit about prosody, right? But not so much. So they still sound very robotic, right? But the idea is, like you said, if they could crack the code of language, that is, analyze all the possible combinations that are valid. So maybe they could actually learn to speak quite fluently like we do, but that's probably not possible. So
I think nowadays they are able to speak, but I think there's more to that, because it's not just a matter of combining words. And that's one of the things that we've been talking against universal grammar. It's not just a matter of putting the words in a sequence and reproducing them. There's so much more
involved.
There's pronunciation involved, there's intonation, there's prosody, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, for example, I do have Alexa here. I don't want to say Alexa out loud, otherwise I'm going to activate.
Yeah, if I say, hey, Google, he's probably going to answer back. Yeah.
But I do have that. So if I tell this artificial intelligence a joke, if I'm sarcastic to them, sarcasm is mainly in the intonation and sometimes in body language. Well, we're not going to consider body language in this case, but let's talk about intonation. And intonation plays a huge role in sarcasm. And those artificial intelligence and these artificial intelligence that we have today, they're not able to understand this intonation now. So are they able to speak? Yes, they're able to speak. But they're able to speak as using Chomsky's universal grammar, putting a word together, you know, creating sentences to give you the time, give you some calculations, give you the weather, informing you the result, the final scoreboard of a game. They're able to understand if you say turn on or turn out the lights, turn on the TV. Yes, they are able to understand these things. But if you tell a joke, for example, they're not going to understand. If they're sarcastic, they're not going to understand. These machines are not going to understand. But our students do. But our students do. We do.
Exactly. And that's the thing, you know, for in the future, very far away from now, you know, if we ever have robots, you know, cyborgs or whatever that, you know, enhanced humans with, you know, cybernetic parts, or it might be possible through a series of technologies that they can understand language. Because let's imagine sarcasm, for example. There is a very different reading, body language reading, for example, and even waves in the brain, heat, and, you know, how your pupils react and things like that, that are cues for us to understand what sarcasm is. And it's very contextual, right? It really depends on where it's coming from, the timing and everything. If we have sensors put into a robot that can read all that information, and we have a code that says, probably if a person is acting this way, behaving this way, moving this way, you know, they are being sarcastic, and sarcasm means this. So you have to answer in a sarcastic way. It might be possible, but I don't see how. I mean, we're going to be long dead if this ever happens. And this is the biggest thing that I think makes us different. Yeah. It's that our organic piece of junk inside our skull that is much more efficient than, I heard it's 100 times more energy efficient than a computer, for example, because, you know, we use kilohertz, and computers, they use gigahertz, for example. So if you think about it, we are able to do so much with this thing that we have inside our skulls, because we have this incredible capacity to rewire certain parts and certain networks of our brain. And computers, they need to be programmed to do that, which means that you, as a human being, the programmer, the guy who's writing the code, you have to be able to anticipate every single situation that might happen for you to be able to put a line, a code for everything that, and this is impossible. I mean, that's why programmers nowadays, you know, people who write code, they have this huge ethical responsibility, because maybe when they are writing code for something that has to do with, I don't know, keeping us alive, like, I don't know, some sort of medical technology or whatever. And if they haven't considered one possibility, something very silly maybe, and their code stops working, the person can die, you know, for example. And there is a lot involved there. So that's why machines, they will always be behind of us, unless we can find a way to put a lot of different technologies inside a computer, which is probably going to take a lot of time, if it ever happens, you know?
And that's a big if, right? And,
that's a big if, yeah.
That's a big if, you know? And there's a very nice episode. It's an old episode by South Park. And they, well, it's a joke, of course. They joke, they tell jokes on everyone, and they're joking. Yeah. The Germans saying that the Germans don't have a sense of humor, and the Germans created a machine to tell jokes, because that machine was able to be sarcastic.
I think I remember
and to
this.
Understand sarcasm. So that's what we're talking about, because that machine didn't work very well, because machines cannot understand sarcasm. But that's the thing. Yeah. And, well, we still have like 10 minutes, and we have some comments to go through here. But that's the thing, because through language, through the evolution of our language, we cannot say for sure that we've been unlearning to speak. I don't think we've been unlearning to speak. I think we've been, as we said, and as you said, we've been adapting our speech. We've been adapting our grammar. Probably, I don't know. I don't know, maybe in 5 years, in 10 years, we're going to slow down a little bit. Let's say that social medias are not going to have limitation of characters anymore. Let's say that social medias now are going to be more voice-based, like artificial intelligence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So
and video as well, yeah.
Video as well. So this is going to require the an oral communication more than a written communication.
Definitely.
So maybe we're going to be able to generate longer or more elaborate utterances than now, because yes. nowadays they have WhatsApp. And if you're going to text a person on WhatsApp, you're not going to write a Bible unless you're having a discussion with your, you know, beloved yeah. one. Yeah. I suggest you not do that. You know, do it in person. It's way better. Yeah. But if you're yeah. if WhatsApp is the only way you have to have a discussion with the person, with your beloved one,
definitely,
you're going to write a long text. But otherwise, it's going to be, okay, how are you doing? What time? Very straightforward and very simple, very easy. That doesn't mean that it's killing yeah. the language. We're just adapting the language. And what Drika said, yes,
perfect.
The same,
yeah.
they consume funk. Yes, they consume funk.
Yeah.
And if we consider yeah. that most funk lyrics are not very elaborate, why not? Yeah. Why not? You can bring it to the classroom. That's okay to bring funk to the, if your students are into it, bring it to the classroom. And then you can make comparison, because maybe that the lyrics are not elaborate, but maybe it has a great social content that can generate
Definitely.
A discussion. And if you generate a discussion, yeah. you can have something more formal. And if you have something more formal, that's the cue for us teachers to show our students and teach our students that it's possible yeah. to be more elaborate when you're listening
sure.
to funk music. Okay, you understand that. But if you're having a discussion, a debate, something more official, then you can have access. You can retrieve that more complex structure, you know.
That's true. And you know, one, like you said, I don't think we are unlearning to speak. We're just speaking in different ways, many times trying to be faster, convey more meaning, because we have very dynamic lives nowadays. Our society is always, you know, very hectic, and we have to find ways to express ourselves very fast. And I feel like one of the things that will prevent machines, let's say, from, you know, getting to the level of complexity and sophistication that we have acquired is actually what goes against the instincts of the machine, the lack of instinct, you know.
Yeah.
So machines, they don't have instincts, actually.
At all.
They are logical machine. They are logical devices, you know. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we can do that a computer will possibly never be able to do is we can use our primitive brain, our limbic system, to form stereotypes and, you know, to form certain frameworks that are completely illogical. And if you think about language, many aspects of language, they don't make any sense.
At
because they are just things that came to being because of convention, of repetition, because somebody said, oh, that sounds cool, let's use that. And now we are saying the same thing after the 200 years, you know? And it doesn't make sense. And machines, they cannot generate those things because they need to be programmed. And this is how interesting the grammar of coding is. It's a grammar that presupposes a conditional clause. When you build an algorithm, it's an if clause. It's if this happens, then go here
yeah.
or then go there. That's programming. That's code, you know. So everything has to be anticipated. Everything has to follow a logical sequence. And our brain is both logical and illogical. And that's why we will be speaking for a very long time, and machines will probably never get to the same level. And Drika said, David Crystal talks about, yes, I had the honor of seeing David Crystal a couple of weeks ago, and he mentioned that linguists around the world were kind of worried that the emojis, emoticons, and, you know, they were going to take over, and then the language was going to be destroyed in a way or whatever. But there was a study, and he talked about this study. Those kids who use a lot of emojis in text nowadays, texting, first of all, nowadays it's kind of stopping. They're not yeah. using so much. Yeah. But when they came out, it was a big trend. It was a big fad for a while, and then no more. Second, they are still able to write essays just like any other kid has ever done forever and ever. It's not because they're using a smiley in a text that they're going to transfer that to their dissertations, you know? So I think language is okay. Languages is going to be there for a very long time, you know.
Yeah, and
as long as we're humans. Yeah.
And I remember when you were still in Europe, you said, "Man, I was talking to David Crystal, and we were having this discussion too. Very brief. It was on WhatsApp.
WhatsApp.
We were talking about this, and I remember telling you that I said, "Dude, I don't know what kind of linguist David Crystal has been talking to, because I'm not worried about this, you know.
Not at all.
Tell him to talk to me, because I'm actually not worried about this. Conservative
linguist, you know.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of linguist he's talking to.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right, Andre, because symbols have so many semantic charge that all we have to do is guide our students. We have to say, you know what? You can use your emoji on WhatsApp or whatever you want to, as long as it's not something very official. But if you're having an essay, if you're creating an essay, a composition, whatever, don't do that. You know, you can use your emoji to remember a certain word that, you know, as we were saying a couple of episodes ago, because emoji has an image and the image is stored at the back of our mind, etc. So you can retrieve certain words or certain expressions using emojis. Yes, it's fine. It's a strategy. Yeah. But it doesn't mean that they're going to insert an emoji into their essays. So yes, Drika, you said a couple of minutes ago, a good reason for us teachers to watch ourselves when we're role models. Teachers also have to be careful when we're speaking, and we also have to be careful with the models. We have to be careful with the guidance we are providing our students with, because if we just say, no, technology is not allowed, don't use emojis, et cetera, they're not going to be engaged. And if they're not engaged, there's a big chance they're not learning and they're not going to pay attention to us. So why not do that? And again, language is fine, guys. Language is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay to have variations. It's okay to have different grammars.
Oh, definitely.
You know, our students are going to have different grammars. And the more grammars they have, the more frames they're going to have in their brains, the more networks they're going to have in their brains. So that's fine. That's good, right, Andre? You know?
That's good. You know, I was thinking of this example of Ebonics. You know, people from the Bronx in New York, for example, the black people, the black community. So I met this guy who actually used Ebonics. He calls it Ebonics. It's kind of a street lingo, you know, that people use to communicate in black communities in the United States. And he used that in the school that we worked with, because he was a black guy. And he wanted to kind of keep his heritage alive, and also to speak in code so that other people wouldn't get him, right? But anyway, so I remember that if you watch movies all over, you're going to see many black people because I think the segregation is pretty, I think, more visible in ways when you look at the United States, for example.
Yeah.
You're going to see black people asking, "Where you are?" They're going to say, "Where are you at? Where you at, man?" And this is a type of grammar, right? So you have where, you have the pronoun, you have the preposition, and, you know, you can understand that.
Yes.
You don't need to use a verb.
Yes.
And in this case, you know, verb to be, okay, sure. Some languages don't even have that, like Japanese, I guess. But that's the thing. This variation is good for us.
Yes.
And again, if we want to be competent teachers, and if we want to expose our students to the greatest possible combination of, different grammars so that they can actually function in different situations around the world, we should actually bring those grammars into the classroom, or at least, you know, tell them that there's something out there that is not formal English, but it's as valid as, you know, it's the way people communicate. So we have to respect that. And it doesn't make them any inferior, you know,
that's
very important.
At
exactly.
All.
So language will be fine and people will speak the ways they do for a very long time. And that's going to change in a couple of years. It's always changing.
Yes.
And we're going to make new things and create new words to express new things. And maybe we're going to simplify grammar even more. You know, who knows, right?
Who knows? Yeah, we never know. You know, it's a living organism. Language is a living organism. And
yeah,
it's dynamic.
Okay.
It will evolve. And
we have 5 seconds. Sorry, man.
So, guys.
So, thank you, guys.